The Tom Woods Show, episode 1252.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, if your homeschooling program is just not working out for you, it's never too late to join the self-taught Ron Paul curriculum and get $160 worth of free bonuses when you join through my link, ronpaulhomeschool.com. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. Dave Smith is back with us. Always great to talk to Dave. If you don't know Dave yet, man, you have missed out on one of the rising stars in our movement. It's not too late for you, though. You can check him out as host of Part of the Problem, which is a great podcast. Also, he last year, roughly a year ago right now, released a comedy special that was extremely successful. That's his Libertas special that you will absolutely love. It is adults only, I will note, so you don't want to play it in front of your six-year-old, but it's very good and very funny, and there's a order page that's very long, so I've got a nice convenient redirect, tomwoods.com/Libertas, L-I-B-E-R-T-A-S, tomwoods.com/Libertas. You can go and grab that, and I thought we would talk today about what's been going on with the situation surrounding Brett Kavanaugh and the accusations against him as he's being considered as a Supreme Court justice, the accusations leveled against him by Christine Blasey Ford that he assaulted her, sexually assaulted her decades ago. Now, I want to point out that by and large, the Tom Woods Show is a show you can listen to driving around with your kids in the car, and there's not going to be a problem. But obviously, I assume you can use some common sense here. When this is the subject matter, there's probably going to be some material discussed that you don't want little Johnny and little Sally hearing about. So this may not be the episode to have playing when the kids are in the car. So having said that, let's welcome Dave Smith back to the show. Dave, welcome.
Thank you, Tom. Great to be here, back on my favorite show in the universe.
I appreciate that very much. I was thinking about skipping this Kavanaugh thing. I think I've written about it. Did I write about it to my email list? I can't even remember. I've talked about it with people. But then I thought, I like my episodes to be evergreen, because 3 years from now, who's going to listen to a Kavanaugh hearing episode? But on the other hand, if you have a daily program and you're not occasionally talking about fleeting things that are of real interest at the moment, what's the point of doing it? So I thought, who would be fun to talk to about this? And I know you've talked about it, but I've deliberately not listened to that so that I wouldn't just kind of ask you things that I already know the answer to and whatever. I wanted to make it purely spontaneous. So I figured Dave Smith, I know this is the kind of thing that he's talking about. And I bet the same things that are making me crazy about this thing are making him crazy. Now, let me say from the outset that Kavanaugh would not have been my first choice for the Supreme Court. I'm sure he's not your first choice. So it's not like I'm wedded to this guy and come what may, I'm going to defend him. I really didn't imagine myself being in a position where I would be defending him or anything like that. So I want to just put it out there that I'm not somebody who's got some preconceived dedication or devotion to him at all. But what I will say is this: I know that since he gave his opening statement, there's been some concern about whether he was entirely truthful, and we'll try and get into some of that in a minute. But I'm just talking about the sheer strength of the statement. I was driving from Florida to Alabama for the Mises Institute Supporters Summit, so I was stuck in the car, and so I figured, what the heck, I got nothing else to do. I listened to his opening statement live, and I have to say, I thought that was about the best statement you could possibly have asked for. It was well delivered. It was comprehensive. It was, I thought, very convincing that he had all these testimonies and all that. And then I went on Twitter and I found people saying, oh my gosh, he just doesn't have the temperament to be a judge. Wasn't that an embarrassing statement? And I thought, I live in a different universe from these people.
Yeah.
So did you actually hear the whole thing?
Yep. I was glued to the whole thing. It was pretty incredible political theater. And I watched Dr. Ford's testimony, and then I watched all of his. Let me just say, because I think you framed this completely in the right way, but just to be a little bit more forceful, it's not just that Kavanaugh isn't my top pick. I think he's horrible. like genuinely horrible. He's got a horrible track record on executive power, on government surveillance, on privacy. He's really bad on a lot of very, very important issues. For people out there who are pro-life, don't just listen to the hysterics of the left. This guy, it's not even clear that he's against Roe v. Wade. And there's a long track record of Republican appointed Supreme Court justices selling out at the last minute. So don't even think you can count on him for that. There's a reason why people like Lindsey Graham love this guy, why George W. Bush has been, supporting this guy getting the nomination. He is not at all somebody who libertarians should be happy about. So just, I think that's important to say at the beginning. But yeah, I agree with you. I thought his opening to his statement was very powerful. It was exactly what I would think someone, if they were being unfairly tarred with these horrible accusations, exactly seemed how they would act. I thought I actually got choked up when he mentioned his daughter praying for Dr. Ford. I mean, I thought it was a really sweet moment. And yeah, I mean, we just must be living in a different reality than some of these people who are like, well, he showed the wrong temperament, or they, you know, these people who were making fun of him, crying. I thought it was just insane.
Yeah, who wouldn't break down in that situation? Let's see. If I didn't say it in the opening and I can't remember, I should tell people, obviously, if you have kids in the car, you know an episode on Kavanaugh is going to have some stuff they probably shouldn't be hearing about. So having said that, let me say, if you've been accused of gang rape and the whole country has heard these accusations and half the country has already made up their mind that you're a gang rapist, and then you go on TV, yeah, you know, if you're not outraged, that's not normal. And moreover, this idea that judges are supposed to be dispassionate, that deals with when they're judging cases that they're not involved in. Yeah. It doesn't mean that if your next door neighbor's a judge and you spray paint a swastika on his house, he'll come out and say, why, sir, I believe that was not the proper course of action to take for the following 35 reasons. So that's one thing. And then secondly, and now I've seen a number of people say this, but honestly, I said it right away. As soon as I saw this on Twitter, I said, this guy can't win, because suppose he hadn't been outraged. Suppose he had just given this dispassionate statement and, you know, well, I'm innocent of these charges and let me give you the reasons why. That wouldn't have satisfied them either. They would have said, well, look, he's obviously guilty. There's no sense of outrage from this guy. He's just sitting there like a limp piece of spaghetti. You know, there's nothing that he could have done. Either he's too angry or he's not angry enough.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's the whole game here from beginning to end. So, you know, if there's no FBI investigation, that's proof that they don't want to look into this. When the FBI comes back and doesn't find anything, that'll be proof that Trump limited the scope too much. No matter how he reacts, he would have been, you know, it would have been evidence of his guilt. And that's the situation. And it's very, you know, the reason to me why I have been talking about this on my podcast and why I think this is worth talking about is because, you know, this is kind of like it's like a lot of different issues coming together. So it's the left's anti-Trump hysteria. It's the Me Too moment. It's a Supreme Court justice pick. And it's just kind of like, you know, we've talked about this before, but there's just more and more, it seems like there's two different ways of looking at the world. And the people who are generally speaking on the left, when it comes to this Me Too stuff, there's really nothing you can do once an accusation's been made.
So now we've got this week delay while they're going to sniff around it. Michael Malice, you see, he had the classic tweet about this.
Oh, yeah, the FBI investigating for a year.
Yeah, they investigate for a year. They can't get to the bottom of that Las Vegas shooting. However, they're going to find out about a high school party in 1982 in a week or something. You know, this seems implausible, but
right.
That's where things are. Now, since he made his statement, a number of critiques have come out that have tried to go through the statement with a fine-tooth comb. And there's an example of this in Current Affairs, has a pretty detailed one. And yeah, I mean, there are some issues raised there. I'll link to it at tomwoods.com/1252. I'll link to a number of things. I think some of it can be explained away. Other parts might be more difficult. But then there's this, I think it's a Dr. Cleveland, that she's got a really good series of points showing that there are very serious, very problematic inconsistencies in the Ford testimony with regard to the way she's described this incident over a number of times. So I don't know how to get into the weeds on some of that. But certainly, when you get into his yearbook, or both the yearbook and the calendars, and they're asking him to define certain terms, and he's defining them in ways that, like Devil's Triangle, that don't seem to be the way anybody else defines them. Now, it's not metaphysically impossible that his friends had a drinking game by that name, but it seems to me that what's going on there is, I think probably he is lying about a couple of those terms, and I think it's because he thinks, look, this is embarrassing enough. I was a jock kid, and you know how jocks are, and I did some of this stuff, and it embarrasses me now. I've been embarrassed enough, and I'm going to just stop it. I'm not going any further on this. I think that's – other people are saying, well, that proves he must have assaulted her. I don't think that's necessarily the case at all. I could easily imagine him thinking, I'm humiliated enough. I'm putting my foot down when it comes to this stuff. So – but what do you think about that? You think I'm right?
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I mean, there were certain defining the terms in the yearbook when he was talking about his past drinking. Yeah, let's say he was being less than forthright. And I think he might have, of course, I don't know for sure, but I think he might have outright lied about a few of those things. And, you know, that in itself can be a big problem. I mean, that would be theoretically a justifiable reason for him to not be confirmed if he did lie to the Senate Judiciary Committee. At the same time, I guess I do have a little bit of sympathy for him because he was put in a situation where he couldn't be honest if he was in fact lying about those things. So, if he had said, yeah, you know, there were a few nights where I drank that I don't really remember. Yeah, I vomited from alcohol a few times and I passed out a few times. Well, right away, then, you know, that would basically be the same thing as admitting guilt. So I think it's a, it is a tough situation he's in. Now, this is the problem with all of this stuff when the FBI is involved and these long testimonies are involved. This is how they've gotten a lot of people who are like, in Trump's orbit, where the FBI will sit down with you for 6 hours and interrogate you. And there may have been no crime initially committed, but if you say one thing that's inconsistent, then they've got you. And believe me, all of these people know what they're doing. It's once these accusations get aired out, now it's an excuse to not just be asking about his legal opinions or his history on cases, but now they can ask about every intimate detail of his high school activity. And if they get him in anything that looks like a lie, I mean, at this point, all it takes is a few people saying like, well, we know that he was, you know, drinking and passing out, or no, this isn't what that meant in the yearbook. And now you might have an argument, which again, this has been the Democrats' goal the whole time, is to find any way to get this guy to withdraw or to get him not confirmed. And then Trump has to appoint a new Supreme Court justice, and there won't be enough time to get him confirmed before the midterm elections. And they're hoping they can take back the Senate, in which case he'll have to nominate a much more left-wing judge.
Yeah, exactly. So I think everybody involved in this controversy, I mean, I just mean, it's just even anybody who has an opinion on it, has to be honest and say, it can't be a coincidence that the polling data shows 3/4 of Democrats believe Ford and 3/4 of Republicans believe Kavanaugh. That can't be a coincidence.
No, I completely agree with you. And I got to say, I wish more people, it does bother me a little bit on both sides, where when you see people acting certain in an area where we know you can't have any certainty. I mean, I don't know what happened with Dr. Ford and Judge Kavanaugh. I have no idea. And nobody else outside of those two, I think, really does either. And for people on the left who just believe her, I find that to be very, you know, I don't know. It's you're not living in the real world. You're letting your ideology drive you. And if somebody says no, they just believe Kavanaugh. I mean, it's like it makes no sense. We have no idea. This is an accusation from nearly 40 years ago that something happened at a party. Is it possible that he did exactly what Dr. Ford says? I mean, yeah, I think that's possible. However, what you have is one person coming forward with a recovered memory. She struggled to know what year it was. She still doesn't know what day it was that it happened. She doesn't know the place. She doesn't know how she got there or how she left. She named four eyewitnesses, none of whom can back up her story. So it just seems to me that this is just an insane standard that you would ruin somebody without any real evidence. And so it's not, you know, my take isn't that I believe Judge Kavanaugh. I don't know. I don't know what to believe. I agreed with you that I was somewhat moved by his testimony. I found Dr. Ford's testimony to be, I don't know, evoke a certain emotion. Like, I felt very bad for that woman. And it didn't come off like she was, you know, this evil person who was lying. It came off to me like she was a troubled, damaged person who quite possibly has been assaulted in her life. But I don't know what you can do with that information.
Exactly right. Now, on that, I guess, again, everybody's gone through her story with a fine-tooth comb. And there are a lot of details that people notice have changed, and some people say these are significant and she's made these changes deliberately and all that. And again, I'm going to link to some stuff on the show notes page if people want to get into the weeds. This is turning into like the Kennedy assassination. Right. You need to read, you know, 500,000 words before you're even entitled to an opinion on it. But the part of her story that I just have trouble with, and it could be that I don't know the psychology of memory or even the brain functioning with memory, but what I don't understand is, on that traumatizing night, which would have to be, presumably, most of your life is not like that. I mean, that would have to be one of the worst days, if not the worst day of your whole life. How would the time between your escaping the house and your returning to your house, why would that be a blank? You honestly, to me, that would be the most vivid thing, somebody picking me up and rescuing me. How could that not be at least almost as vivid as the attack itself, is somebody rescuing me? And why has nobody come forward? Oh, wait, I was the person. I picked her up. I came and got her. That is the detail I have trouble understanding why it's left out. But on the other hand, you could turn that around and say, if she were just inventing a story, don't you think she would have covered that base? The very fact that the story has a gap in it, or more than one gap, in a way could indirectly point to the veracity of the story.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I mean, there is, you know, and I've talked to a couple psychoanalysts about this, because I was kind of curious about this idea of you know, blacking things out and recovered memory. And it is extremely rare, but it does happen. However, usually it's associated with more like childhood traumatic events. It's a little bit like, now this doesn't mean it's impossible, and you know, something could be incredibly traumatic to the person who's involved in it, you know, but this isn't like I was groped and thrown down on a bed by another boy when I was a teenager at a party. It's usually more like a child being, you know, abused in a much more severe way. But again, I go back and forth with what you were saying. I mean, it also does seem like if this was just a calculated, we're making up this story. I mean, you'd probably make up, seeing as how nobody's, you know, backing up her story either way, she might as well make up a detail that would, you know, make it kind of seem more convincing or something like that. So I don't know. What really bothers me about the situation, I guess, are two things. Number one, the way the Democrats have handled this is just absolutely disgusting. It is disgusting, and it's been completely politicized. This could have been done. I mean, I hate to ever give him credit because he's probably the worst person in the Senate, but Lindsey Graham was right when he said if the Democrats wanted an FBI investigation initially, they could have had one. Yeah. Because Senator Feinstein had this information before the FBI was done doing their background check. And she could have not publicized this, not dragged Kavanaugh's name through the mud, not dragged Dr. Ford's name through the mud, and just had, you know, turned this information over to the FBI. They could have looked into this, but they didn't want to do that. They wanted to make this a political thing. But the other thing is that the kind of larger point from the Me Too supporters is that basically we have to believe women. You can't question survivors, which of course begs the question itself. Well, how do we know someone is a survivor? I also don't love Sorry, I'm going off on a tangent here, but I really, that term survivor, as a Jew, it has a particular kind of connotation with it. And I find it really, I don't know, it's kind of like when they call climate skeptics deniers. I don't feel like this word was chosen at random. I think it actually means something. And I'm okay with calling victims of rape survivors, but now it's kind of like that's not even what Dr. Ford is alleging here. And what she's saying happened is not okay if it happened. It's really bad. But like, you were thrown down on a bed and someone started pawing at you, you know, 36 years ago, and now we refer to you as a survivor. I have a little bit of a trouble with that one.
Well, are they referring to the not that I want to get into the details of what Louis C.K. did, but are they even using that term to refer to those women?
Yes, they are.
That's absurd.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
He's a creepy guy, and what he wanted to do in front of them is creepy. But come on now. You're going to use a term that we use for people who endured, you know, one of the worst possible fates anybody could imagine, and we're going to compare that to watching some guy? I mean, that's – no.
Yes.
Nope. That's stupid.
No, I mean, if you've had, like, your bottom padded – against your will, you're now a survivor. It's really, really insane. I mean, it's just like, come on, like, who, you know, and you know, they'll say these things, like they'll say a lot, you hear this all the time, where it's like, oh, you have to, you know, listen to women or believe women. And I'll tell you, and I'm not going to name names, but I've talked to, and not just like the women in my life, like, you know, my wife, my mother, my sister, like there's a lot of women that I know who don't exactly go along with this whole Me Too craze. And, but I mean, I talked to several different women in the comedy world about the Louis C.K. situation, who will kind of say in a whisper, they'll be like, yeah, I think like that people are way overreacting to this. I think like Louis, you know, didn't deserve to lose everything. I mean, those are women too, but they're just kind of intimidated to not speak up and say something. The other thing that gets said a lot by the Me Too proponents that really, really bothers me. So here's, and I think this actually goes to the heart of their argument of why we have to just believe women when they come forward, is this number that gets repeated over and over again, which of all statistics, this one might bother me the most. It is that only 2 to 10% of women are making false accusations when it comes to rape and sexual assault. So it's such a small percentage of them that we basically just have to believe them, because I mean, if only 2% of them are lying, this whole false rape accusation thing is pretty much a myth anyway. So we just basically have to believe them. So the first thing on that I would say is that, you know, by the way, 2 to 10% is a pretty wide range. Like there's a pretty big difference between 2% and 10%.
Yeah.
But aside from that, this is more of a BS statistic than any other statistic that I've heard popularly or that's quoted that's out there. I mean, the idea there are two studies that I've ever been able to find that backed this up, where these numbers come from. Now, one of them's from like 1991. The other one's a little bit more recent, but even before I go to the studies, you might just ask yourself, just logically speaking, how could you possibly know that? How could you possibly know what percentage of rape allegations are false? I mean, what would the standard for that be? Are we saying like if it goes to the cops and they have an investigation and it goes to trial and you get a conviction, that would be someone we know did it? All the rest, are we counting all the rest of them as false allegations? Because if you count it that way, it's the vast majority. Like the vast, vast majority of them would be false. But of course, that wouldn't be sufficient to know that it's a false accusation just because you can't get a conviction. How would you actually know when so what this turns out is the number comes from when charges are brought, there's a full investigation, and the investigation determines that these things were made up. So think like Tawana Brawley or something like that. And that's where they get these numbers from. But these don't deal with any of the unreported incidents of rape or sexual abuse, which is where all those numbers like the 1 in 4 and 1 in 5 numbers come from. There's obviously just no way to know. Like how would you know? that there's a let's say someone went to the police and said, this guy raped me. And they're like, well, there's no physical evidence, so we can't move forward with this. What does that count as? Is that a fake? I mean, we don't know if that's a false accusation. So it's this claim, which is so, and it has such like Orwellian, like so many Orwellian ideas follow from it, that now because we have this one study, which is completely nonsense, you have to prove your innocence. And you have to call for an FBI investigation of yourself, or you're basically guilty. It's that one really bothers me, and I find it very creepy.
Well, I also find creepy what we see very much on display here as a case of the more general social justice warrior principle of saying things like, women believe such and such, and if you want to defend women, then you have to do X, Y, or Z, and women are going to get their revenge at the ballot box. Now, there are plenty of women who disagree with them on any number of issues, but they're not included in that group of women. We women are going to go to the ballot box and vote you out, and we women this and that. So it's as if those other women, therefore, can't really be fully women, and it must mean that they are in thrall to the patriarchy or something, and they have false consciousness. They have to be dehumanized. They have to be treated as not even worth listening to, because we've already explained that all women believe a certain thing. So the existence of you just can't be, so we're just going to act like you're not even there, or we'll just call you ridiculous name. We will not at any time engage with you. And they do that with racial groups, but they do it with women like crazy. So you're not even really a person, because didn't you hear what we said? Women all think A, and we heard a rumor that you think B. So you're not women. We've already explained this to you. Whereas I don't think our side of things, I don't think we do that to people. I'm perfectly willing to say that there are some women who are going to agree with me and some who aren't, and they're all women. How about that?
Yeah. It's and it may be somewhat, I mean, this might be because of the person who I am, but I feel like every single woman in my life disagrees with all of this craziness. And like, you know, it's, and that maybe that's somewhat of a comment on who I am and who is like in my circle, but it's like, so none of these women are, I guess, count. But no, I agree with you. I don't see a whole lot of that happening on the other side. That is particularly a left-wing tactic, that it's kind of like, and maybe that makes sense in a way, because right, they are in a lot of ways the collectivists, so they see things as these monoliths. But yeah, it's like the, you know, black people feel a certain way, women feel a certain way, you know, and it's demonstrably false. Like, of course not. That's ridiculous. Even I mean, but they've been doing this for years with the you know, the pro-abortion side. Like, yep, that's just the opinion of women. And you look at these opinion polls and it's like, you've got like, it's not even like they have 90% of women. You've got like 56% of women, and you decide that's women.
Yeah, that's the thing. There are some cases where you could say, like, for example, if 95% of the black population of New York City votes for David Dinkins, well, there's a little bit more plausibility for Jesse Jackson to come in and say, I represent the black community. I mean, maybe.
Right.
But a number like that, let's just say not reasonable. Now, right now, I know you're a lot younger than I am, but still, you remember what it was like you, I guess, grew up in the 90s, more or less, mm-hmm. And I grew up in the 80s. And, yeah, there was some political contentiousness. And in your day, you remember how much the Republicans didn't like Bill Clinton. And I remember how much the Democrats didn't like Ronald Reagan.
Right.
But I never really felt like half the country was at war with the other half. I did not have this feeling that sometimes I'm in social situations where, thank goodness they don't know what I believe, because I would never get out of this room. It would just be a big, long fight. I never really felt that way. And now suddenly I do feel that way. And I wonder about this Brett Kavanaugh thing. Let's suppose he does get confirmed. There are tens of millions of Americans who are convinced that basically a rapist is now on the Supreme Court. And if there are 5-4 decisions coming down and he's the swing vote, what does that mean for legitimacy? Like, I don't care about the legitimacy of the state, but I'm curious as a citizen about what my fellow citizens think about the legitimacy of the regime. I mean, what happens next? That this just further divides and solidifies this division that has become so toxic. And by the way, again, I'm not per se against division. I'm just saying I've never lived through anything like this, and I think this is going to ramp it up further. I'm not saying that's why you should vote against him or for him or anything. I'm just observing it.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, and I share the same feeling. Like, it's not, there's a way that you could think maybe this has a positive impact. I mean, I know, like, you and I both would be very happy to see an actual political division, like see some secession and nullification and things like that. But, you know, as long as we're all kind of forced into this large central state, the fact that people are very divided might not be a good thing. And, you know, I remember it being a kid in the 90s and people saying, oh, this is the most, you know, divided we've ever been. Then under George W. Bush, it was like, no, this is way more divided. Then under Obama, it was way more. But this is something different than has ever existed in my lifetime before, that you have a large chunk of the country who believes that essentially a fascist has risen to power. Then you have another large chunk of the country who thinks that Trump is their only hope and is their hero. And yeah, I mean, this is almost just the latest manifestation of that. And I got to say, I mean, I don't know where this all goes forward, but I do not see a way that this is going to be undone. I just don't. I think the sides are digging their heels in more and more and moving further and further away. And there's less and less of a center of a middle ground. I'm fascinated to see where all of this goes, but I don't think I think the toothpaste is out of the tube. I don't think it's going back in.
Totally agreed. And I likewise think there's no way the Democrats are going to reconcile themselves to 40 years of a Trump court. I can't imagine that. I think they are going to have to start acclimating people to the idea of a larger court, that when they come back in, they are going to expand that court at least to 11.
Yeah.
They've got to start preparing people for that. They're not just going to sit back and say, well, I guess the social revolution is on hold for 40 years. That's not ever how the left, that's how conservatives are. They'll say, well, you know, we have to respect the rule of law. They'll come up with some bogus excuse for why they're not doing anything, but that is not how the left operates.
Yeah, and the way it's kind of worked in this country, right, like as you were saying, is that the things will continually move in the direction that the left wants them to move. Maybe not quite at the rate that they want it, but, you know, maybe the conservatives, you know, get in there and slow it down. But as long as the left is generally winning, then we can all agree to kind of be civil. But I think with Trump and the you know, the movement that he kind of represents, there's a true fear that they're actually losing ground. And I don't mean to say from like a libertarian perspective that we're winning or anything like that, but it seems like this has really brought about a you know, it's kind of like the establishment and the Democrats and the left wing in general. They're almost like a cornered animal now. And this is when it's getting really, really ugly, and they're getting vicious. And now you see where they've been quite content, I think, for a long time to smear people as like racists. And that term has kind of lost a lot of its sting because it's just used in, you know, so haphazardly. But now this is the new thing. It went from rapist to like to fascist to Nazi and now to rapist. That's their smear now. And I agree with you. I don't think these people are going to give up political power voluntarily.
All right. Do you have any thoughts about what's going to happen in November? You know, we hear about a blue wave, and then we have other people saying, well, maybe the Republicans could turn it around. And incidentally, I'll say parenthetically, there's this concern that, oh, no, the Republicans are worried that this Kavanaugh thing will hurt them with women. But when I looked at the polls, it showed, again, as I said, 3/4 of Democrats believe Ford, 3/4 of Republicans believe Kavanaugh. And among independents, it's a statistical dead heat. So it's not clear this goes in any one particular direction.
Right. Well, it reminds me a little bit of, I mean, you remember, you know, you may have noticed in the mainstream media that, you know, the parents being separated from their children at the border has completely gone away. Like, that was this big political issue. And even though it hasn't really completely been resolved, it's gone away. And what happened was they were like, well, this is going to tank Trump in the polls. And it didn't. And there was actually a few polls that seemed to indicate that Trump's approval rating amongst Hispanics went up. And this is a big thing that they have not, the mainstream media has not been able to deal with this. And I you would think a pretty interesting story over the last several years is that Donald Trump did better amongst the Latino voters than Mitt Romney did. Like, you would think that's a really big story, right? The guy whose central issue was like build the wall and cut off illegal immigrants. It's the exact opposite of what the mainstream media would have told you. Like, this will destroy you with the fastest growing demographic. Well, actually, he did better. He did better with them. And just relating that to what you were just saying, I don't know. It's possible. I don't know that this will actually have that effect. What we have to wait and see. But I think there's got to be a lot of people who are like, okay, this is getting a little bit crazy. This is getting a little bit crazy. Like, even if, and this might be the most risky thing that I'll say on this podcast, but, you know, if we can't be honest here, where can you be?
On the Tom Woods Show, for crying out
right.
loud, yeah.
But let's say, hypothetically, that Kavanaugh did what he was accused of. Now, that is a not okay thing. It is a crime, and it's immoral, and it was an act of aggression, like everything like that. But if Kavanaugh, look, the guy's been had six background checks by the FBI. He's clearly not engaged in any criminal activity as an adult. Nobody in his adult life has even accused him of anything. Even if he did that, I got to say, this is like 40 years ago. The guy is now a husband, a father. He's a judge. It's like, I think there's got to be a lot of people out there who go, I don't know if you should be ruined for one crime when you were 16 years old. And I think, now, I don't know if this will sway the midterm elections one way or the other. And I don't really know what's going to happen. I'm very interested to see. But I got to say this. The Democrats' backs are against the wall here. If they don't have a big midterm election, this is a huge indictment of everything the mainstream media has been telling us, everything the Democrats have been telling us, that not only did Trump win, but after winning, people are like, you know what? Things are pretty much okay, and we're fine continuing in that direction. And if that happens, I think the same thing we're talking about now, I think it's going to get even worse. I think, number one, it's going to be Putin interfered with the midterm elections again. This wasn't a legitimate loss. Like you said, there's a rapist on the Supreme Court. Donald Trump is a fascist. And I think you're going to see things get even uglier. And I mean more violence in the street, more of the stuff where, Republicans and right-wing people can't go out into public without getting harassed. I just don't think... I think it in the DNA of the left is that they don't give up power. The whole game is about political power for them, and I don't think they're going to give it up voluntarily.
Dave Smith, part of the problem is a podcast that so many of my listeners say they also listen to and enjoy, and I subscribe to it on my own device. So part of the problem you can listen to for free, but you can get it with all kinds of great benefits if you subscribe over at gasdigitalnetwork.com. Do you have any kind of a code for people over there?
Yeah, if you go to gasdigitalnetwork.com and use promo code POTP, you get a 15% monthly discount.
Okay, POTP for part of the problem. So that's at gasdigitalnetwork.com. I'll link to that at tomwoods.com/1252. And with that, I'm going to let you get going, Dave, but thanks for chatting this out with me, and we'll just see what happens.
Yes, it was nice to talk to you, Tom. Anytime. Always love being on.
All right, gang, a couple quick things. Remember, if you enjoy and appreciate what I'm doing here on the show, I hope you'll join my amazing community of wonderful people over at supportinglisteners.com. Secondly, it's coming up very quickly, but I have a dinner event I'm doing in Orlando with the vice chair of the Libertarian Party, Alex Merced. We're going to be doing that October 13th. You can get the details at tomwoods.com/events. That's it for today. See you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.